You know, each year the congregation does a survey, and one of the things that shows up almost every year is a request for child-rearing sermons. Now, I think most people that have children are afraid to touch it. At least, let me speak for myself, afraid to touch that subject because they'll judge us by what we say, and then you look at our children and go, he doesn't practice what he preaches. So I'm going to preface it by saying that, you know, I'm not giving this because I've done it well. I'm giving this because I've made a lot of mistakes, and I think I can talk about that. You know, Linda and I have had the privilege of raising four children, and a lot of people have done that. But not everybody has spread them out as wide as we have. Because when my oldest daughter was 19, we had our youngest daughter. And if you do the math, that means we had children in our house for under 18 years of age for 37 years. So we had a lot of experience dealing with children. You know, he said God doesn't have a sense of humor because he said, we're going to keep letting this happen until you get this right. And I'm not sure I ever got it right, but I will say that the last child and the parenting we did on her was very different than my first children. And my son always says, that's why God gave firstborn sons double portions. So anyways, from that basis, that's why I'm talking in this today. So, but I would like to look at the biblical basis for that. So if you would turn with me to Deuteronomy chapter 6, we'll start in verse 4. It gives us kind of a basis, I think, that I like to look at. Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 4, it says, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And then we go through there, and we see he's talking about all of Israel is supposed to have that love. And then in verse 6 he says, And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. And when I read this is kind of a community calling to everybody is required to be. He introduces this part about teaching children, kind of like talking to the community of everybody is responsible to love God, to love his laws. And this kind of reminds me of, I think it was Hillary Clinton, and it wasn't her that first said it, but it takes a village to raise the children. And, you know, you can poo-poo that, but there is a lot. And you know, even in the congregation, we're all a role model for the children to watch. And so I think it's not, even if you don't have children, hopefully this message will provide some help that we all have a responsibility in rearing of the children and as how they grow up and how they develop as young adults. So in verse 7, it says, you know, it talks about, you know, when you sit down, when you walk by the wayside, when you lie down, when you rise up, in every aspect of our daily lives, we need to have that love of God, that love of God's law. And that's kind of the backdrop of where I'm coming from when I talk about how we are child-rearing. You know, if all Israel loved the Lord with all their heart, and parents taught their children to love God with all their heart, then God anticipated that this teaching would carry forward from generation to generation. And if it's done according to God's will, each generation becomes more proficient in parenting godly children. And I've seen this in my life. I really believe that my children have done a much better job in parenting their children because they came from a very godly basis. We try to give them that. But I think each generation is able to build on the next, and that's what God desires we be done. So what do we think of when we talk of child rearing? Do we think about discipline, obedience, compliance? You know, these are elements are important, but hopefully after my message today, you know, I've given it a lot of thought. Because when I first started parenting, I had a very different concept of those words than I do today. You know, obedience, in my mind, is a result of good parenting, and it's not a cudgel for parenting. And so as a parent, our job is to teach our children a godly value system. To me, that has to be the basis of everything, and to turn them toward God. You know, we have a very short window of opportunity to do this, because we only have them in our house for about 18 years. Now, we may still see them after that, But we begin to lose influence very, very quickly after that 18 years. So how do we teach our children to be discerning? How do we assist them in developing godly character? After all, that's what God desires, is that each one of us have godly characters. And so that's what we should be our goal of parenting as well. So I've titled this, Parenting Godly Children. And yeah, that's my goal. That's my thought process, is how do we, as a parent, point our children toward God? So the first point is, we have to set the example. We have to be the role model of what our children, we want our children to be. I remember my mother using the adage of, what you say, what you speak so loudly, I cannot, what you do speak so loudly, I cannot hear what you're saying. The adage is that what we do, our role model, is so much more important, especially for young children, than what we say. Obviously, instruction is important, but role model is so important as well. As parents, we must set the examples in our actions. Obedience to God's word, of course. But honesty. I remember my children coming home. They were with their grandparents, and they went to a movie, and my son was 14, and the age limit was 12. And so he told my son to tell him that he was 12 so that he could get in for a lesser amount. That was an example, and they remembered that, and they brought that home. Simple things like that is what children will say. So we have to make sure that our role model in managing our finances, in how we show love and compassion, our work ethic, all of these things, children watch as a role model. You know, as parents, our example, the role model that we set, should inspire our children to greatness. That's what we should be desiring. How we do things, how we act, is, are we inspiring our children to greatness? You know, in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 1, we'll look at just that one verse, but I think it's important because it talks about how children are imitators. And it says in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 1, it says, therefore be imitators of God as dear children. Very simple concept, that we're supposed to imitate God, but he's saying as dear children. They're imitators. We know they do that. You know, Paul writes to the Ephesians, and that he shares that characteristic of children, is that, you know, he tells the Ephesians then to follow the example that Christ set. And then let's look at Christ's example, his characteristics, his actions, if you would. And look at that in verse 2, it says, and then it says, and walk in love. So these are the things that we should be doing. These are the examples that we should be setting. You know, Christ gave himself as a sacrifice. You know, as parents, obviously we're not sacrificing our life, but we do sacrifice our time. And it is a sacrifice. And we need to walk in love. You know, whether we're getting up at 2 a.m. in the morning to attend to a crying baby, or whether we are staying up talking to a teen about things going on in their life. That time is so critical. So we walk in love. And then in verse 8 it says that we walk in light to bear the fruit of the Spirit, goodness, righteousness. So again, it's saying these are the role models. These are what we should be doing, what we should be sharing with our children. And then in verse 15, it says, and see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. So the heading I have here is walk in wisdom. So as parents, as we set the example, walk in wisdom. We need to make sure that the time that we spend, that we spend it wisely, that we're not wasting our time and wasting the, you know, giving an example that to our children that is not what we want them to do in their life. And walking in wisdom is that we understand God's will. We understand what God's way is, and we teach that to our children as well. So that first point is to use God's example to be a loving parent and to set that example. The second point is to to spend time with your children. Yeah, we talk about that role model. I can remember very explicitly working very closely with my father. I was fortunate to grow up on a farming community, grew up on a small farm, and I spent a lot of time with my dad, whether it was on the farm. For a short period of time, he also drove a truck to spread agricultural lime on the area farms, and I would just spend time with him in the truck. And I would see there were times that I can remember that he was very resourceful in things that he had to do. I saw how he interacted with the people, with the farmers in that area. So there's so much time. When you spend time with them, you learn those types of things. You know, when you spend time with your children and you work side by side with them, you can learn so much. And my oldest son has done a great job. He spends time, he loves to play golf, and his son loves to play golf, and that's their time together. They spend that, and there's so much development that goes on when you're on a golf course. Just respect, focus. My granddaughter loves to play volleyball, and he plays tournaments with her and sand doubles. And again, the character that you build and the confidence that you build by spending time with them is immeasurable. And so just spending time with them, teaching them just during the day's activities. You know, in Matthew 4 and verse 4, we have to turn there, but it says that we live by every word of God. And that's when you spend time with them, you can spend that time and you live by every word and they see that. And then the third point is that we need to teach our children. Obviously, that's an absolutely critical aspect as well, is we teach them in a way that help them to understand life and what's important in life. And some of the most critical thing, obviously, is obedience to God's law. Again, that comes from the role model, but we teach them how God's laws apply to the daily activities. You know, God's law is not just something that we read about. God's law is practical. God's law is something that we have to put in practice and that we apply on a daily basis. And for a young child, that's so important to teach them that. Another thing is being resourceful. My son and I we get together, especially like at the feast, we'll go out and we'll just have a glass of wine and watch the sunset, and we'll sit out there and we'll just chat. And one of the things we talk about is that what is so critical in a young person's life is being able to be resourceful, to learn to be resourceful, because challenges are going to come up. And if you have the ability to be resourceful, and what came to mind is, I told you Nolan loves to golf, and so he is on the golf team in high school, and my son also, they belong to a country club. And so my grandson wrote to Titleist and asked him if they would sponsor him. Now he's 13. And they wrote back and said, well, we are not sponsoring any high school students right now, but we thoroughly appreciate your writing to us. But about 3 weeks later, he comes home with a dozen Titleist balls. Now that's probably $45, $50 worth. These are Pro V1s, right? And my son said, Nolan, I told you not to go to the pro shop and buy golf balls. We will buy golf balls. He said, no, Dad, you don't understand. He said, the Titleist rep dropped these off for me at the golf club because I wrote them. So, he got his dozen of golf balls because he was reached out and says, hey, I want a sponsorship. But those are types of things that, children can take that. Yes, it's simple. It's a dozen golf balls. But that type of resourcefulness is so critical in developing a child and helping them to have confidence as they go through life. And then character development, teaching them character discernment is absolutely critical. I often listen to Joe Rogan, and one of the things that he said about character development, it really stuck with me, and I think it's a great example. And he says, character development is like mixing a batch of cement. And he said, if you put the right ingredients and you put them in the right order, he says, you get a very solid structure. He said, but if you put them in the wrong order or you put them in at the wrong time with the wrong ingredients, you have a structure that fails. You have crumbly concrete. And I go, that is the way of the character development. We have to give our children, they can develop character at different times throughout their life. And it's so critical that we put that character development, teaching them discernment in the right order, and when at the right age, when they can begin to develop that and understand that. But again, development is teaching them, helping them work through their different challenges that come up. But they make good choices. It's discernment. It's using God's law, applying God's laws into their daily life, and making the right decision. The other point in teaching them is guiding them through their education. And, you know, one of the biggest things I see is that a lot of time parents want their children to walk in their footsteps, right? And it's funny, in my family, the women are a lot of educators. My grandmother was a teacher. My daughter-in-law is a teacher. My daughter is a teacher. Three of my nieces are teachers. And then there's finance people. There's accountants. But, you know, it's interesting. All four of my children took very different paths. So my oldest went to 4 years on campus, went to Penn State. Brandon went to 1 year on campus, and then he came home and he commuted to school. And then Catherine went to one year, and then she decided to go the Starbucks route, and she did remote learning at Arizona State University. And then my oldest son is not a traditional learner, as my daughter-in-law likes to say. He learns by practical application, so he would not have done well in school. So he went into the trades, and today currently owns two businesses of his own and has done very well. But so I guess my point is that I was pushing all my children toward college, and now I learned that that's not always the right way. And now, in fact, I think that this country needs to spend more time training people in the trades. The European system is much better. They do a much better job of that. And today, I know in my business, tradespeople are absolutely critical. And hard to find mechanics, hard to find your HVAC people, hard to find plumbers. But those are really, you know, very respectful professions and things that we need to be directing our children toward. So teach them. Find out what their proclivities are, what they enjoy. You know, my son was always kind of the salesperson, but he likes to learn hands-on. You know, he told me, he said, Dad, they would try to teach me the Pythagorean theorem in high school. It made no sense. But he said, when I had to pour a square footer, he said a 3-4-5 triangle made a whole lot of sense to me. He said, I could figure it out. And so it's that way that we need to work with people or work with our children on how they learn and what they have a proclivity for. You know, Brandon obviously followed in my footsteps in the finance side, and I remember when he came home from high school, he took a class, an elective class on accounting, and he came home and he said, Dad, he said, I used to think you were really smart. He said, I just started this class, and he's debits and credits. He said, that is really simple. He said, it's just not that difficult. I go, okay, all right. I get it. And he has done very well. So, but he had a proclivity for the accounting on that. So the fourth point is we do need to get the discipline. But I think discipline is a different way of looking at it. And, you know, when we talk about discipline in biblical context, my mind often goes to Proverbs chapter 13 or chapter 22. But let's turn to Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 24. And let's see if there is a different way to look at that. Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 24. And it says, but he who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him and disciplines him promptly. But he who loves him disciplines him promptly. So what does that mean, spare the rod? Well, you know, the word rod can be translated rod. It can mean stick, but it could be a stick that is used for walking, like a walking stick. It could also mean a stick that is used like a shepherd's staff, where you use it for guiding. So rather than a rod, which I kind of Growing up is what I thought of striking a child, paddling a child. We think of it more as a pole that is used to support our children as they walk that path, the right path, the godly path. Or it's a staff that's used to nudge a child that may have wandered off that path back onto that path. And when you look at it that way, it makes a difference, right? It's a more loving, a more nurturing way of looking at that. You know, discipline is training that helps them to develop self-control, restraint. You know, it talks about those that have that control develop a character and develops an efficiency in the way they go through life. Because, you know, if you have character, life becomes easier. Life becomes, you don't have the same challenges that if you don't have character and you make mistakes that God, yes, will always forgive, but those mistakes have consequences. And so it's sometimes we spin our wheels until we develop that character. And I've seen that in some of my own children, that they have gone through some very trying times. But developing character, that discipline, is so important. There's another scripture I'd like to look at that has, I think we can look at it in a different way as well, and that's in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 6 and 7. Hebrews chapter 12. We'll start in verse 6. And it says, For he whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. So, and then in verse 7 it said, if you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? So that word chasten is actually a Greek for paideo. And it actually refers to tutoring. And it's the whole training and education of a child. It's not just a discipline. It's not chastising as we often think of that. But there's another, the word can also mean nurture and to care for. You know, it's a very different picture when we talk about it in that context, right? More like a tutoring, and that's what discipline should be. Discipline should assist our children. It should not be because they want to avoid punishment, but the discipline should rather be teaching them to discern good from evil, making wise choices, guiding them, nurturing them. And that's what it's saying, what a loving parent does that. And if we think about it, that's what God does with us, right? God doesn't want us to be fearful of him in a cowering way. We want us to be fearful of him in a respectful way where we understand and where we watch what he guides us to do, and we want to do it in a way that pleases him. And that should be the goal for our children as well. And we see this in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, where we kind of gives an additional understanding of this, where it talks about, and it says, and you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and the admonition of the Lord. So he talks about, don't provoke them, don't anger them. It should be a loving relationship. It should be a nurturing relationship. And again, that It talks about bringing up in training. Training, again, is the same root word as chasten. Interesting. It's that paideia. And again, it has the training and the building of the whole, the mind and the body and the education of the children in that full cultivation of mind and the spirit and training them. So it's teaching them God's laws. Godly principles. Godly's principles pave the way for a successful success in all aspects of life. And so it's absolutely critical. Teach them life skills. You know, how to become productive adults. Financial management, you know, job skills, all those types of things. And the word admonition that is used here is the Greek word nuthesia. And it means a mild rebuke. Or a warning. It's not a physical punishment. It's an exhorting or calling one's attention to where they're going astray. It's a very different concept from that matter. It's to bring something to mind and help them to jog their memory of where they may be going astray and bring them back. So teaching involves both the training and admonition, but it's education and exhortation, right? It's that a much gentler way about it than I originally thought about it when I read these. You know, we won't turn there, but in Proverbs chapter 22, in verse 6, it says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he should not depart from it. And what I get from this is that child-rearing, training, parenting is a long, it should be the end game. It should be a long game, right? We're not looking at just changing their actions today, but it should be giving them instruction on how to act in the future and why they're acting that way. You know, it's not, if we play the long game, we have a different concept and a reason for the way we teach, the way we train, the way we admonish and bring them. Because discipline must always be aligned with our value system. It can never just be dependent on emotions or a desire for control. And I know that as a young parent, there were times that I did it from a control standpoint and not from a standpoint of aligning it with the value system. Another way to say that is discipline should be transformational and not transactional. You go, what do you mean by that? Well, when I was growing up, my dad had a saying. What he told us was that if we got a swat in school, we would get two swats at home for every swat in school. That's transactional. That's not a transformative situation. Or another thing is, if you get home at you have a deadline. You have to be home at 12. What happens if you get home at 12:05? So what you can set a curfew. You can say, hey, you need to be home by this time. But don't make it so rigid because things can happen, right? There could be a reason that maybe somebody on the way home, there was somebody that they had to stop and help. So those types of things, we always need to make it in a way that it is not, our instruction should be to change their behavior and not just to be, you get this if you do that. And it's very different when you have that concept and you look at it that way. So when we discipline, our desire should be that our child understands why the action was wrong and what they must do to make it right, how they must change their behavior. That's transforming, and that's not just transactional. And the last concept I'd like to look at is, well, actually the second last, is compliance versus commitment. And I look at this and I've seen both of them. You know, growing up, it's much easier to have a child that is compliant. But it's much more important to have a child that is committed. You know, if all they are trying to do is just be compliant, it's not there. They don't believe it. And I take that example of when my daughter, she was very compliant, my oldest daughter. But when she left the house, she never again she doesn't attend Sabbath services. It was our religion. It wasn't hers. On the other hand, my oldest granddaughter is a senior this year, and she would like to play, to go get a scholarship for playing volleyball. But obviously, she's very committed to God's Sabbath. And so she was talking to a coach the other week, about a month ago, and they were on a recruiting call. And it was a small Christian college because she knows she has to do that, you know, probably go to a smaller college. And she wasn't going to bring up the Sabbath because she thought that could be a game stopper. But the coach said, well, tell me a little bit about your faith. She goes, well, I'm a Sabbath keeper. And she said, I was hoping that you could tell me how I might be able to fit into your program. It wasn't, negotiate that out. It's, I'm a Sabbath keeper. How are you going to? Can you deal with that? Can you work me into the program? And ironically, she was in town last Sabbath, and then she went up to McConnell on Monday and had a visitation up there, and they gave her a 50% scholarship for athletics. That they offered her a scholarship, and she was very open and clear that she was not going to do it. The Sabbath is hers. she's committed. It's not a compliant and just doing it. So it actually, you know, parenting is so important. And it's just something that we have to do. God gives us a very short time to parent. But parents must be the role model. Children, especially young children, are imitators. And we need to ensure that we set a godly example and they will imitate us. Children learn about God's love for them through the love of the parents. You know, it's the other, a couple weeks ago, my three-year-old granddaughter in Murfreesboro told her mom that she goes, I want to hug God. To her, God is real. They talk to God every day in prayer. And my daughter explained to her that, you know, God is not here on earth. And she turns very adamant. She says, oh, I will hug him one day. So to her, it's very real. God is real. And if we parent them that way, we teach them that way, children learn how God is real, God is to them. But parenting never ends. Our goal changes over time, from authority figure to sounding board to grandparent. But even as a grandparent, we are still parenting our children. And we never stop being a role model for our children and then for our grandchildren. So as parents, we have a tremendous responsibility when bringing a new life into this world. God gives parents a few short years to love, teach, shape, and mold that person into a potential son or daughter of God. And we must never take that responsibility lightly. And we must give parenting the diligence that is required to develop the sons and daughters of God. So my question is, how will you inspire your child to greatness?